Starbucks is expected to double to more than $2.5 trillion by 2020. That's from the UN Environmental Report. And that could translate to millions of jobs around the world. And many of those jobs could go to the poorest of the poor. But it's not all rosy for green workers. The report warns many of these jobs can be dirty, dangerous, and difficult, low-paying, and cause exposure to hazardous materials. Chris Quimby, Fox News Radio.
And we are just learning that Northwest Airlines shareholders have approved their merger with Delta, but it still needs antitrust approval first. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
You're listening to 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. A big storm that's just off the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina is going to be drifting northward. May become a tropical issue over the next 24 hours. Either a tropical depression or a tropical storm. Either way, it's got lots of moisture, and it's a fairly strong storm. Will bring us a strong east by northeasterly wind, and some of those wind gusts better than 30 miles per hour over the next few days. Once the storm clears by the area, probably by sometime midday or later on Saturday, we get into a clearing trend. It'll most likely give us fair weather for later Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of next week. In the meantime, increasing clouds for today. There'll be some clouds this afternoon, mid-60s. Tonight is going to be overcast with rain. Some of the rain could be heavy at times overnight and Friday, or nighttime lows mid-50s, highs on Friday in the lower 60s. On Saturday, overcast with rain in the morning, tapering off to showers in the afternoon with our temperatures in the upper 60s. Sunday, mostly cloudy, maybe a leftover shower, but the trend will be towards clearing with the daytime highs mid-70s. Monday and Tuesday, mostly sunny, near 70 to 75 each day. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri, reporting for Whitney Media, WVOX and WVIP.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of the New Rochelle Day Nursery, the Christian Brothers, band leader Tony Cabot, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levinsold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, September 25th, 2008. It is 10:08 in the morning, the third day of autumn. We have lost 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 38 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 6:46 this morning. It will set at 6:46 this evening. We will have exactly 12 hours of daylight today. Roughly 3 months to the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year and the first day of winter, on which we will have 9 hours and 13 minutes. That will be 2 hours and 47 minutes less than we have today. The moon rose at 2:34 this morning. It will set at 4:57 this afternoon. We are between last quarter and the new moon. Next full moon will occur on October 14th. Daylight savings time ends on November 2nd, and my regrets, I did not have the opportunity to look for the high tide information. So if you are out there boating or fishing or swimming or whatever you're doing, you'll have to look in the paper like I always do. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. 19 American service members died in September as of Sunday, 14 since last we met 2 weeks ago. Most recent report of American deaths in Iraq alone, just in Iraq, 4,171, at least 30,642 have been wounded in action. Today's casualties are Staff Sergeant Matthew J. Taylor, age 25, from Charleston, South Carolina, and died of small arms fire, Baghdad, 921. Small arms fire, I guess everybody knows what that is, but just let me make it graphic so you feel a little bit of the pain. He was shot by a rifle, a pistol, or something like machine gun. Chief Warrant Officer Corey A. Edwards, age 38, of Kennedale, Texas, one of seven soldiers killed when their helicopter crashed near Talil, Iraq, on September 18th, 1 week ago today. The other six killed in that crash, Sergeant Daniel M. Eshbaugh, age 43, of Norman, Oklahoma, Sergeant Anthony L. Mason, age 37, of Springtown, Texas, First Sergeant Julio C. Ordonez, age 54, of San Antonio, Texas, Chief Warrant Officer Brady J. Rudolph, age 37, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Corporal Michael E. Thompson, 23, of Hara, Oklahoma, and First Lieutenant Robert Vallejo, the second, age 28, of Richland Hills, Texas. All of these men were from the 2nd Battalion, 149th Aviation Regiment, 36th Combat Aviation Brigade of the Texas Army National Guard. Now, when people sign up for the National Guard, as you know, they don't expect to go to war. This war has changed a lot of lives. Also killed in action, excuse me, since our last broadcast 2 weeks ago, Staff Sergeant Darris J. Dawson, age 24, of Pensacola, Florida. He was one of two soldiers killed during a non-hostile incident, whatever that means, in Tunis, Iraq, on September 14th. The other was Sergeant Wesley R. Durbin, age 26, of Hearst, Texas. They don't tell us what constitutes a non-hostile incident, only that they were killed in Iraq in American uniform. I don't know if that's any better. Several others died of illness and motor vehicle accidents. May these American servicemen live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Now it's time for the Culture Quarter, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Today's review is the film Man on Wire, the story of Philippe Petit, the greatest wire walker who ever lived. I say that without any question. He's the man who walked a tightrope between the towers of the World Trade Center while they were still under construction. We are working on getting Philippe here for a future program to tell us of his experiences in his own words. In the near future, I will also be reviewing the White Plains Performing Arts Center's production of Camelot, which we will see this Friday night, and on October 5th, Elmsford's Broadway Dinner Theater's production of Mel Brooks's great musical, The Producers, four cast members of which are here in the studio for today's program. Okay, my review of Man on Wire. Man on Wire is how the entry on the arrest form read. For describing the offense. Three words which summarize the 45-minute tightrope walk 1/4 mile up on a wire 200 feet long. Incredible. Philippe Petit, a 25-year-old Frenchman, was a juggler, unicyclist, and street performer, as are many others, but a wire walker like no other. On August 7th, 1974, Philippe danced the wire. He laid down on it. He wowed the crowd below and the police above who were waiting to gather him in a once-in-a-lifetime feat which changed him and all of us forever. If you think that's an exaggeration, see this film. If you don't think it is an exaggeration, see it anyway. Just see this film. As a documentary, it gets 4 stars unequivocally, Man on Wire. When considering the dangers of the walk, and Philippe was not arrogant in that way, he understood that he could die. He said, what a way to die, doing what you love passionately. When Philippe first started walking, his face was tense, but within a few steps, his friends noticed his face light up in a smile, and they knew he was all right. I can't even imagine what a guy's doing 1/4 mile up. He's in the clouds. The ground is way below him. He's on a wire that's maybe an inch wide, and all he has is his balance beam, and he doesn't know what the wind is going to do. It boggles my mind. How did he get a 450-pound cable built by Rick Van Leuvender, who currently lives in West Pittston, Pennsylvania, to the top of the Twin Towers? I say that because Rick is an old friend of mine. He had a crew of somewhere around six people, it seems. I didn't get a full account, but he had teams on both towers. The cable was strung between them by shooting an arrow attached to fishing line from one tower to the other. That was used as the transport for ever larger cords until the cable went across. The footage in the film is archival of the actual preparation and walk intertwined with current day interviews. His answer to the inevitable why, well, first he said there is no why, but then he also said, when I see three oranges, I juggle. When I see two towers, I walk. Interesting note, the World Trade Center lacked public appeal up until the time of the walk. The towers were considered ugly and utilitarian, but in 45 minutes, Philippe Petit changed that perception forever. In the 70s, Petit regularly performed in New York's Washington Square Park. He also walked from the Eiffel Tower to the Palais de Chaillot and many other buildings, including the Louisiana Superdome. And he walked across what is now the Turtle Pond in Central Park as part of his part of his penalty for committing this awful crime was he had to do some more walking, this time legally for New York audiences. The film won lots of awards, including Sundance, very well deserved. Music was great, eclectic, some originals, but also a fifth of Beethoven, which is the rock version of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and a section from Hall of the Mountain King from Edvard Grieg's Peer Gynt Suite. I highly recommend this film. If you can't find it playing near you, don't fret. It is due out in DVD in the near future. Man on Wire, buy it, Netflix it, beg it, borrow it, or steal it. See it. Okay, let me just identify us quickly. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 out of New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Woodstock, New York, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Jackson, Mississippi, or Jackson Hole, Wyoming, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. This program is Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, and my guests today are Bob Amaral, Anthony Valbiero, Craig Foles, and Amy Griffin. They are members of the cast of Elmsford's Westchester Broadway Theater's production of Mel Brooks's The Producers. Welcome Bob Amaral, Anthony Valbiero, Craig Foles, and Amy Griffin.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to have my studio filled with such lovely people. I say lovely because theater people are always lovely. Now, The Producers is actually one of my favorite musicals of all time, really. I'd say maybe it's my second favorite. South Pacific has to still retain number one, but I just enjoy the hell out of The Producers. And so let's talk to these great actors. I'm really looking forward a week from Sunday to coming to see your production. Let's just talk for a minute about how an actor prepares for a role. You're actors and singers all. How do you prepare? Amy, why don't we start with you? Yeah, go ahead. What do you do to learn the role, to get into the role, and how do you keep it fresh day to day?
Well, that's an interesting question. This particular role, I had not done The Producers before. I was very excited to get the job because I love the show. Several of our cast members have done it many times in many different places, but it's a new show for me. And we had a very, very short rehearsal period, which is quite challenging. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I did, which is, I suppose, a bit utilitarian, but I tried to familiarize myself with all of the music, and I tried to arrive knowing all of the lyrics in advance, so that's just sort of one less thing you have to worry about. My big featured scene in the beginning of the show, which is my most fun scene in the show, is with Bob, who is fabulous and has done the show many times before. And so
Bob Amaral, like, as Max Bialystock.
Yes, as Max Bialystock. And so really, you know, the director was tremendous. Bob's tremendous. Joel Newsom, who plays Leo Bloom, is tremendous. And they're all in the rehearsal. So I was like, you know, lead me on, oh, great ones, basically.
Which is really your character. Your character is Hold Me, Touch Me, is it?
Yes.
And you're, what you're really saying as a character anyway is lead me to Max.
Well, I'm sort of leading the way. She's very aggressive. my old lady is
but we do
very adventurous.
We do understand that he seduced you in the first place before this
yes,
show.
Yes, that's
so,
true. That's
so now true. That you're aggressive, just means you like what you got.
Max sure. chases her until she catches him.
Basically, yes, that's an excellent way
now,
of
how
putting
does,
it.
How does a young, attractive woman make herself look old?
Oh, gosh, we have wigs and costumes and makeup and... you change your stance and you're sort of, you know, I'm sort of hunched over. And it's a very, obviously, it's a very comic show. So you're doing a lot of sort of funny old lady stuff.
It's the magic of the theater.
It is.
It's a little unfair to Max, though, to give him someone who looks like an old lady who's really got the passions of a younger woman.
Oh.
After all,
ask Bob about
everybody
that.
Who knows the show knows he has to serve as many, many women.
That's my lot in life.
It's a burden.
Somebody's got to do it. Might as well be me.
Yes.
Anthony, you want to address that same question? Well, how do you prepare for a role? How do you keep it fresh?
Well, in my case, it's a lot of different roles. So I do almost like 11 different parts play. And a lot of them are sort of, in looking at them to view them initially, they're sort of stereotypical. I play an Irish cop. I play a typical irate boss. And
Mr. Marks. Or
yes.
Anything but typical.
Well, you try to not make them typical. You try to take them as characterizations and make them little gems so the audience can have a good time. And obviously, because you're playing that many roles, people will start to recognize you as you go on in the course of the night.
Yes.
Even if you've got different types of costumes. And it's a wink, if you will, to
sure.
the audience and an
but
homage
we do that with sets all the time.
All these wonderful little characters that you see throughout any kind of musical.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what really the show is anyway. The producers is a wonderful, you know, bow, homage, love letter to show business in so many respects.
It's fabulous. It's a fabulous show. Mr. Marks, that character is captivating. I mean, you have to, it's brilliant, really written role, and I presume that you're up to it. I can't wait to see you in it.
It's interesting because we were just talking about this in the dressing room the other day that, you know, musical comedy is like an amazing thing. You have to create characters sometimes in four lines, and that's all you have sometimes. And it goes right into a song or it goes into a bit. So you have to really find things that'll catch an audience almost immediately, whether it's the way that you use your voice or different stances that you have or mm-hmm. a little interesting laugh mm-hmm. to make those characters interesting. Because a Mr. Marks could be just a grumpy old man, but you have to find little cute ways to make him.
Did you pattern the role after the John Lovitz performance or did you do it completely different?
Not at all. I saw bits and pieces of the movie. I prefer the play much more than the way the movie was, and I didn't. As a matter of fact, if anything, I can remember there was a character in I Love Lucy. People remember the episode when little Ricky was born. It was this wonderful character actor. He lived to be like 100 years old. I can't think of his name. Maybe somebody would. He played the father that had like the five babies when little Ricky was born. And he was this great type of character and he had this large and all. And so if anything, there's sometimes a character actor or bits and pieces of different things that you sort of use and pull from that. And then you bring yourself to it as well. And then it evolves because when you're doing a run, it starts to evolve. You start tweaking things and finding more comfort. Comfortable little niches here and there.
Do you still enjoy every performance, or is it sometimes, let me just get through this, I have something to do later?
No, most of the time, you know, look.
Once you're on stage, are you just into it?
It's like everything else. It's like, you know, there'll be different times you might get on the stage and say, oh boy, I'm really tired today. Within the course of like 20 minutes or 5 minutes, you're right back in the groove again and you're finding different things. And audiences help you do this too, because every audience is different.
Yes.
And you've got a great audience out there. They just pump you up. They get you going.
Cool. Craig Falls, same question. An actor prepares. How do you prepare? How do you keep it fresh?
I play this very flamboyant theater director, Roger Debris. I have a very grand entrance.
Very gay.
I come on about half hour into the show. So while Bob and Amy are kind of getting the ball started, I'm backstage getting ready for my entrance, which for me means getting into my ball gown, putting my jewelry on. I have a very elaborate ritual of, you know, when I put my gloves on, for instance, during the I Want to Be a Producer number. Then I go downstage. I have a dresser downstairs. I have a dresser waiting with my gown. We have a whole ritual of putting it on. So by the time I've done that and I come up on the lift, you know, then I'm ready to be
now,
Roger Debris.
The character Roger Debris is a producer who's a flamboyantly gay producer.
A director.
I'm hired by
the producer to badly direct this show.
Right. Anyone who's not familiar with the producers, Mel Brooks figures out Max Bialystock, the producer, along with his accountant, reluctant accountant sidekick, who finally throws in with him, Leo Bloom, they decide to write a bad play because a failure is going to make them more money than a success. So they decide to write a bad play with the worst director, and Craig Foles plays this Roger Debris, which is the worst director. Let me ask you a question. When you're getting dressed in drag,
yeah,
for this role, do you just slap on your costume and you figure you'll get there, or do you start getting into that gay head as you are dressing?
Well, it's not a gay head for me so much as a theatrical head. I mean, he wants to make a grand entrance, and I think that has... So by putting on the heels and the jewelry and the gloves and finally the dress, that's his way of being as over-the-top theatrical as possible.
Well, it's more than theatrical. It's gay.
I mean, it is gay, and that's the song, but I think that's part of what he... Part of how he wants to sort of throw Max off his pins. That's the way I see it, anyway.
Cool. It's also very tongue-in-cheek. You have to understand this is 1959 when the show takes place. So the term gay wasn't even really used in that way so much,
right,
then. So it's supposed to mean that the song Keep It Gay, which is the big number that Roger,
okay,
does,
yes,
is supposed to be about keeping it fluffy and light and
right,
wonderful.
It is kind of sly.
But it's in a dress.
It's very in-your-face and a closeted sort of at the same time.
He also doesn't live in the dress. He happens to be putting on the dress because he's going to a function that is a costume, the choreographer's ball, where they have a costume, a prize for best costume.
A subtlety that I missed, but there's,
yeah,
there's no question, of course, his whole entourage, that's what it is. But okay, I don't mean to dwell on it. I just wonder that if I had the role, would I start feeling feminine as I was getting dressed,
Roger,
or would I just slap on the clothes and
I think all these characters are people of the theater. I think of him as more a theater person than necessarily a gay person.
Do you all feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Really? Sure. Especially with, if you don't mind me saying this, Roger's character, if anything, Craig plays him like a guy in a dress.
Right.
And that's what
which
makes
is to me what's funny about it. If I were going to be Faye, that would be like adding a hat on a hat. You know, to me, I'm
absolutely
this very almost aggressively masculine sort of guy in a dress.
So you played very differently from I forget the fella's name who plays it in the
Gary
movie.
Gary Beach though did that too in some
really?
Respects.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure he did.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move over to Bob Amaral, who plays Max Bialystock, which is the lead in this play. How do you prepare?
Mostly
and
sleep.
How do you keep it fresh?
Mostly sleep, exercise, rest, and pray that the voice is going to be there when you turn up. No, it's you know, it's like anything else. It's actually more physical than mental, getting ready for Max, because it's a marathon. It's 2.5 hours of running. You don't carry the show as much as a lot of people think, because once the characters of Franz and Roger show up, you're sort of supporting them. They kind of carry the load. But it is a marathon. It's a long marathon, so I have to try and stay as physically conditioned and healthy as possible.
Well, hopefully Mel Brooks, being a theater guy himself, understood the demands on an actor and gave you those little breaks.
Oh, absolutely. It's brilliantly written.
Yeah,
it's brilliantly written.
It's great.
It is a brilliantly written
comes
show.
Across that way,
yeah,
too. And the songs are great. Go ahead, Amy.
I think of a show is as well written as this one to a lot of your work is done for you. I mean, you show up and hopefully you bring your A game and you're inventive and, you know, you're ready to play. But also so much of it's a huge advantage when a show is so brilliantly written. I mean, I think we've all done shows
like
that aren't as brilliantly written, and you have to work much harder to make the show effective.
It takes the audience from this wonderful just ride of laughter and joy, you know. And it's,
and the songs are so good.
Yes.
Oh, whoever knew Mel Brooks was a songwriter? And
he always has been. He wrote for, you know, Young Frankenstein. He wrote for Blazing Saddles. He wrote wrote all of his music.
But those were not... Not
well,
musicals.
The actual...
They're not musicals, but he wrote at least two to three songs for every movie. You never heard High Anxiety? Come on.
Yeah. And in the producer's original film, Hobbs and Gerhagen, also Springtime for Hitler.
Springtime for Hitler, he wrote for the original film.
Yes, they're already there.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. I'm learning something here.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But of course, he being Jewish, the German comes a little easier.
I don't know.
I know that. I had an easier time learning German because I had heard Yiddish spoken a lot at home.
Okay.
And his dialogue is also music. I mean, he's a musician. His dialogue has rhythm.
Someone told me he was a drummer when he started out his career, so he has that rhythmic thing to start with, too.
Okay, we have just a couple of minutes, then we're going to take a break, and then we will come back and we will play a selection from the CD, which is unfortunately not a CD of this cast. It's from the from the Broadway cast.
But would like to about it every night.
Anyone out there would like to produce one, just call today.
We are ready to go.
In fact, all right, well, since we got into that, let me just throw a commercial in here and we'll come back and we'll do that. I would like to talk about my friends at the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. Their number is 835-1070. The Learning Shop is a, I'm going to have to do this by memory. The Learning Shop is a wonderful tutoring company. They do music programs. They do every academic subject. They do all levels. Elementary school, high school, junior high school, whatever your kid needs to improve what they're doing. If they're out of school for some reason, if they're sick, if they need catch up, they will do it. They have individual as well as classes. That's Learning Shop, Harrison, New York, 835-1070. That is 914-835-1070. You will not have a better experience. I know these fellows very well. You're listening to WBOX AM 1460, Environmentally Sound, and we will be right back.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lori London. Senator John McCain still wants to postpone tomorrow night's debate at the University of Mississippi.
When the whole future of the American economy is in danger, I cannot carry on a campaign as though this dangerous situation had not occurred.
But Senator Barack Obama agrees it's important to work on the problem, rejecting a debate delay.
I think it is also important that we communicate to the American people where we need to go in getting us out of this situation.
And debate organizers wanted to go forward.
Having shelled out an estimated $3.5 million to stage and play host to the anticipated historic event, debate planners and campus officials remained insistent that the debate will take place as advertised.
Les Smith with Fox affiliate WHB in Memphis. Both Senators McCain and Obama are attending a White House meeting today on the bailout package. Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is John Fix III from Cornell's True Value Hardware. For years, you've heard me talk about our family-owned hardware store in Eastchester and how we love helping our neighbors with all their home improvement needs. I've told you about our great service and selection and the wonderful associates who work at our store. And now I want to tell you about True Value Rewards, an exciting program that benefits you, our loyal customer. True Value Rewards is a free program that allows you to earn points and discounts on all your purchases. True Value Rewards members get 1 point for every dollar they spend at our store, and each time you accumulate 250 points, we'll mail you a certificate for $10. In addition, each month, selected products at Cornell's are specially priced exclusively for you, our True Value Rewards customer. And did I tell you that the program is free? Even better, when you sign up, you'll receive double points on your first purchase. For more information and to sign up, please stop by. The Cornell's Hardware Store is in Eastchester, between Scarsdale and Bronxville, on Route 22. Cornell's True Value Hardware, serving Westchester homeowners since 1909.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in the narrow Waikigill walkway opposite Big Top and across the parking lot from the Food Emporium, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers. Minuteman Press, down that walkway across from Big Top when you're heading to the Food Emporium, offers quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. In Westchester, 576-0335.
This isn't silence. It's nothing. Every year, 1 million families lose their homes to foreclosure because they do nothing. If you've fallen behind on your mortgage, do something. Call 1-888-995-HOPE. That's 1-888-995-4673. Because nothing is worse than doing nothing. A public service announcement brought to you by NeighborWorks, the ad council, and this station.
Updated by the forecast for today, partly cloudy for this morning, then becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon. Our highs today will range into the middle 60s. For tonight, looks like rain will be with us. Rain heavy at times overnight. Nighttime lows in the mid-50s. Overcast with occasional rain, drizzle, and fog on Friday. It could be a thunderstorm tomorrow, too. Temperatures lower 60s with the temperature trends holding nearly steady at night. With occasional rain, lows near 60. Saturday, periods of rain in the morning and some showers in the afternoon. Upper 60s, a slow gradual clearing for Sunday. I'm Eddie Rogers, Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media for WVOX and WVIP.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. We are back. We have a room full of actors.
Hard to, as you can tell.
Hard to keep them contained. No, we are back here in New Rochelle in WVOX Studios. If you are listening in our local area, you're listening to AM 1460. And I always have trouble with my papers. If you're listening anyplace else, you're listening to www.wb. Here, if you're listening in Piedmont, New Jersey, or Illinois, Buzzards Bay, or Athol, Massachusetts, Panama City, Florida, or Panama, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. And you are listening live. Yes, that is Athol, A-T-H-O-L,
Buzzards Bay,
Massachusetts.
And that's near P-Town.
Yes, it's near Provincetown.
Oh,
yes.
How wonderful. Are you listening on P-Town? We're so happy. We love P-Town.
You are listening to the mellifluous tones of Anthony Valbero hogging the microphone.
Well, that's very nice.
Anthony, since we have you here, you know this.
Yes, I'm here.
You know the history of the...
Well, I know some of it. I'll do the best I can.
Of the Westchester Broadway Theater. More
well,
than
it's, first of all, I believe, I'm pretty sure, it's one of the oldest, longest-running Equity House dinner theaters of its type in the country.
The oldest Equity... New York year-round theater is how they bill it.
But people sometimes don't know what Equity is. That's the
professional
actors,
yeah. Basically.
Equity is the union to which you must belong if you want to be a serious actor in New York and probably any place else as well.
The
headquarters
States.
Is in New York, in the United States, yes.
Yes.
Actors Equity Association, and many actors also have SAG membership, Screen Actors Guild, and various others as well.
But it's been there for many years. I know that it's originally there was another theater there, then they rebuilt it into the space that it is right now. Mm-hmm. I believe it's almost 40 years in existence.
Wow.
And they've been doing wonderful quality stuff for so many years. And many people have also started some of their careers there, I believe.
Tons of people have worked there over the years. The great thing for a New York actor is you can live in New York, commute to this theater, mm-hmm. make a decent salary, play a great part in a great show, and the production values are incredibly high.
Yes.
You know, so that's why they attract a really good group of people. Like Bob has done the national tour of the producers, and he is doing it at Westchester. So that's.
Do you get reviewed in the major press, the New York Times and Journal News, I presume?
I think we were reviewed
does.
On NewYorkTimes.com, something like that.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
And you will be reviewed on this program when I... after I see it.
We'll have to be on our best behavior.
Was that
Sunday matinee, Bob?
I don't think Max Bialystock could behave well if he had to. If you wish to buy tickets, and even though I haven't seen this particular production, I it's got to be great. So I'm going to recommend it before I even see it, and I can't imagine that I won't recommend it after I see it. Mm-hmm. But I will give you an honest review when the time comes. You can go to www.broadwaytheater.com.
Yes.
And theater is the
mm-hmm.
way we like to spell it, T-R-E, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's their website.
www.broadwaytheater.com. That'll lead you to all the telephone numbers and box office that you need. However, if you don't choose to do it that way, if you would like to go to 914-592-2222. Easy enough to remember. That's the box office. 914-592, and then just hit 2 a whole lot of times, and it'll cut you off when you have hit enough. 592-2222.
There's a lot of varieties of what you can see. There's also, I believe, there's group rates for groups who would like to come to see the show, and we find our matinees are wonderful. They're you know, some of the matinees are amazing audiences. A lot of seniors come
to
the matinees.
It's always a full house, and they're always incredibly houses. Appreciative.
Appreciative. Yeah.
You know. And there's always more walkers in the house than there are on stage. For anyone who doesn't know, there's a number in the show in Little Old Ladyland where all of these wonderful little old ladies that Max Bialystock is pursuing end up on stage with their walkers and do a brilliant synchronized dance number.
And that's one of the best choreographed scenes, I think, ever.
Absolutely.
Was it Susan Stroman?
Susan Stroman.
Susan Stroman just somehow, in her brilliance, came up with having all these little ladies with walkers doing this magnificent dance. And of course, obviously, many of them are young women, but they got these wigs.
And men.
Yes.
And men.
Are there men in there?
Oh, yes.
Of course. Yeah. It's traditional.
How am I supposed to know that?
Oh, yeah.
They all look like old ladies.
There's only a couple of us.
The women are men, too. And that's what's so wonderful about this show is that the ensemble, and I have to stress this, the ensemble does such amazing work, and it's grueling. You have to go from one part to another. Sometimes you're underdressed three or four costumes deep as you're going from one character to the other.
It's so true. Everybody gets a workout in this show.
So yeah. Actually are wearing several costumes
absolutely.
At the same time?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So you peel them off rather than put them on?
Sometimes.
And then you put them back on again.
Right.
So how many changes do you do, Anthony?
I do about 11 changes.
11 changes in 2 hours?
There's another show that goes on backstage with all the quick changes doing
that's
running
major.
Here and there.
And sometimes, you know, I'll tell you something. You, as much as the show is a very energetic show and you're dancing, whatever, the changes, I think, are as much energy expounded as far as going from one change to another and setting up your clothes to make sure that they're in the right place when you have to come off the stage to do your change.
So the changes are as choreographed as the onstage.
So actually,
action.
It might be as interesting to be backstage watching it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Sometimes more.
Yeah, really.
Especially and if something goes wrong.
It goes wrong. This sometimes, I'll never forget, one of the first performances we had, I came out, and there's a whole thing where I'm a German peasant, and then I have to come out as a stormtrooper, and I'm doing this stormtrooper thing, and I do the Mel Brooks voice in the show itself, and I came out as a stormtrooper, and I came up, and somebody said, do you realize you did the whole stormtrooper thing, and you had your peasant shirt? So it happens all the time, you know, things of that sort, you know, not too often now, we've got our feelings for it, but you know. But in the rehearsals, as a matter of fact, the choreographer and the director would tell us, okay, now what you'll be doing is you'll be going off stage and putting... They even choreographed it within the rehearsals to give us a time to understand what we're doing.
Oh, I should think so. In most plays, you have a prop person who makes sure you have the right props. But in this case, with such elaborate changes, I'm sure you...
Well, we have
you
a wonderful
have
staff
costume person.
Backstage who helps us, of course, with
have
the changes.
To.
It's
have
it's
to.
Elaborate staff.
Have to.
But we got to do our work for it, too.
Well, you can't be thinking while you're delivering your lines what you're doing next. You have to be delivering your lines, walk off stage, and have somebody else tell you what you're doing now, I think.
Not to mention the singing off stage while you're doing a costume.
Yes. The ensemble is singing backstage singing half the time.
Yes. In the course of changing.
Changing your singing as well.
Your singing as well.
As so part of the show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, yes.
The microphones are live, and they're singing chorus in the background in like the springtime number.
As you're,
and
you're
changing?
Hopping around, pulling your feet on, you're singing the alto harmony or whatever.
What you don't know goes on backstage.
I think I'm going to ask for permission to come again and just sit backstage. Craig Falls just mentioned the springtime for Hitler number, and we have it queued up, so we're going to play you a piece of one of the songs from this play. It was written by a Jew, Mel Brooks, and the song is Springtime for Hitler, which is actually the name of the play within a play that they choose because it's supposedly the worst play, has to bomb, and of course the rest is history. Do we have it queued up there, Chris? Okay, let's hear a piece of Springtime for Hitler.
Deutschland is happy and decaying. We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Rhineland's a fine land once more. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Watch out, Europe, we're going on tour. Springtime.
You know, I would like to say something.
Anthony Valbero.
That it's as far as the show's concerned, there's certain things we have to know as actors too. Is that when we're doing Springtime for Hitler, we're told by the director and also our choreographer, we have to keep smiling at all times so this people know this is a joke. This is not for real.
There's a few Jews in Westchester County.
Well, it's just the fact that it's pretty irreverent what we're doing, so we have to just make sure that it's a joke.
Well, it's irreverent to Hitler as well.
Well, the whole show's irreverent to everybody.
To everybody. That's what Mel, right. Brooks, that's what Mel Brooks is all about.
He's an equal opportunity offender.
Well, we are talking with Bob Amaral, Anthony Valbero, Craig Foles, and Amy Griffin, members of the cast of the producers at the Elmsford Dinner Theater called Westchester Broadway Theater. I believe I have that right. If you want to get a hold of them, it's www.broadwaytheater.com. I recommend you go see this play, even though I must admit I will see it a week from Sunday. Have not yet seen it, but how bad could it be?
Exactly. Hanging in
judgment. Well, let me tell you. Also at that website, they have snippets of the show. They have little snippets of the show on the website.
So if you're a Kentucky Fried Chicken down the street, come up! How bad could it be?
That's the motto of my career. How bad could it be?
So it's www.broadwaytheater.com or 914-592-222-222-222.
How bad could it be? That would be great. Producers, Westchester Broadway. How bad could it be?
Well, if these four have as good a time on stage as they are having here, it's going to be great. And in fact, this interview will be uploaded on my website, www.environmentallysound.org, in the near future, so Mel Brooks can listen to this whole thing, as can everybody else. I presume you have direct lines to Mel. You all have his cell number, don't you? In fact, didn't he review you in Phoenix or something? Did I see that?
No, he just mentioned some press, said some very nice things about my performance and me in general, which was nice.
Now, you have been on Broadway.
Not in the producers, but I did. Yeah,
You have been on Broadway. And Amy, first Bob, what about your experience on Broadway? And how does it differ? Is Broadway like the major leagues of baseball as opposed to off-Broadway, which is minor leagues? Is that an apt analogy?
I guess. But, you know, you spend years training and preparing, and then the call comes, and you just have to be ready to go. And it is the big time. And it's everybody in this business's dream to do that. You know, my first show was Guys and Dolls, which was, you know, a big hit a number of years ago. you know, and that was a great way to, you know, become a part of the Broadway family. Then I did A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, where I stood by for Nathan Lane. I also stood by for Whoopi Goldberg. No. So if you need a black woman, I'm available.
What range you have.
Yes. Yes.
Me and Nathan Lane, Whoopi Goldberg, Bob Emerald.
When he has that skin that changes.
When you first got that first call to Broadway, was that butterflies in your stomach time?
I remember it vividly. I was in L.A. I flew in on a Thursday, saw the show Thursday night, auditioned on a Friday morning, went and had lunch with a friend of mine who was working at the Lincoln Center. We went to the cafeteria. I got the call while we were in the cafeteria and got the job. And I remember walking out through Lincoln Center by the fountain and between those magnificent buildings. And it was like 65 degrees, bright sunny day. Wonderful. And I went, oh my gosh, all is right with the world. It's just a perfect,
what a great moment.
Perfect moment. New York experience.
Now let me just share just one experience of mine. I auditioned for the role of Eugene in Grease, the valedictorian, right? And the audition, it was for the road company, the touring company, but it was on the Broadway stage where the show was being held. And I brought a guitar and I sang Teenager in Love, I believe. And I delivered just a few lines from the valedictory address. And just as I was leaving the stage, they said, "We like that, we want you to come back," which meant I got a call back. And when I left that theater, now this is my experience. You say your experience was everything is right with the world. My experience was I literally could not feel the pavement below my feet, and I understood what walking on a cloud really means.
Yeah.
That one experience. I did not get the role, but that That was my experience. Yeah. Okay. Now, you've also done TV, have you not, Bob?
Yes.
NYPD Blue, Babylon 5, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Any Day Now, Son of the Beach, My Two Dads, Major Dad, Empty Nest, Love and War, Brothers Keeper, Rob Reiner's, Morton and Hayes.
I was lucky enough to have my own series with Kevin Pollak called Morton and Hayes. Rob Reiner was the executive producer. Christopher Guest was the executive producer as well and director. And got to work with a lot of people I admire.
And that was, you were the star of the show.
Kevin Pollak and I were Morton and Hayes. and the preface was that Rob Reiner and Castle Rock, his company, had discovered these thought to have been lost two reelers of a very famous comedy team, similar to Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy, Chick Morton and Eddie Hayes. And they were presented on network television, CBS, in prime time in black and white. So nobody knew what the heck to make of it. And Rob Reiner would come out at the beginning of the show and say, "This is this week's episode. This is what we found buried in a tomb."
When was this? How long ago?
It was before you were born. 1991.
Did they play it? Did he play it real, or did everybody know this was bogus? Or did they really say this really was a show?
Rob sold it as the show. They even had memorabilia at the end of the show, and also a couple of shows we did old makeup and were interviewed by Rob. It was a really ingenious piece. And we would do, you know, like Entertainment Tonight and E! Television, and the interviewers would sometimes start out saying, "Now tell me about Morton and Hayes. Where were they from?" And we go, "They're not real. They're make-believe guys." You go, "Oh, really?" You go, "Yeah." But it was great because it was all period. It was all
40s. How long did that run, Sam? It's very interesting.
Six very short weeks. It was a summer replacement.
It wasn't like you were canceled. It was like you had a built-in.
We had a commitment for 6 weeks, and we were hoping for a back-end pickup.
Just as the producers is playing through November, I think, somewhere in
November 15th.
Yes. November 15th. So you have a month and a half, a little more than a month and a half, to see this play. I recommend it. Okay, I keep saying that. I recommend it. I just feel so sure.
Well, it's a good show. And how bad could it be?
that's going on your ass from now.
We're in it, and we recommend it.
Remember 2 weeks ago when I said, "How bad can it be?" Let me tell you, that'll be the beginning of the
review. Okay, Amy, how bad could you be when you were on Broadway?
Gosh, that's a good question.
She was pretty bad.
I was pretty bad. No,
she was one.
Hopefully, I wasn't. Hopefully, I was not.
What did you do on Broadway?
I did How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I was in the original cast 2 years ago, which was thrilling, and we also returned last Christmas, did a return engagement, and I played Cherry Who. One of the Who's in Whoville. I had cherries all over me and a giant wig and giant cherry hat and a big dessert on my head with a cherry on it.
That's cool. You've also been off Broadway. You played in Forbidden Broadway.
Yes.
I hope you haven't been in this most recent production.
No, I haven't.
Good, because I didn't care for that. I reviewed that. I've seen them in the past. What Forbidden Broadway is?
This is the last one. The right? one for a while.
I hope so.
They're closing.
I hope so. Yeah. It ran. I'm a reviewer. Okay. I'll say it as I feel. Forbidden Broadway is a satire of all the shows on Broadway. Basically, they take bits and pieces of shows which are much better. Well, at least in this one. Shows and they poke fun of them. They satire them. In this case, in this recent production, now this does not say anything about Amy's appearance, which was in a past production. I've seen it more than once, and I liked it in the past.
Well, a dear friend of mine, Christine Petty, did it for many years.
They changed it a lot. I mean,
they updated because this year they poked fun at Xanadu, and you know, I don't mind you poking fun at something good, but you gotta be real. You can't take something that's way better than you and take pot shots at it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can. And they did. But if you care to see what I really thought about that play,
www.environmentallysound.org
and go onto the reviews page and you will see what I thought of that. However, it is an old, a well-seasoned show, and you had a good time with that, right?
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing experience. Now, that's an exhausting show in the best possible way. There's only four people and you.
Yes.
It is. The show is backstage, as we like to say, all the changes and the amazing quick changes and playing 50 characters.
It's an amazing vocal challenge because you have to do all these different kinds of...
It's a workout, definitely.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely.
Okay, now this Elmsford Dinner Theater. I call it that because it's easier to remember than Westchester Broadway Theater. It's a dinner theater, so the price of the ticket includes dinner, or if a matinee is lunch, and I have looked at the menu. It looks quite good. You guys got
everything. My sister has eaten there, and she tells me the food is very good.
You mean you haven't?
No, well, we don't have time.
I have several times, and I love the food, and it's very diversified. In fact, the eggplant is sublime.
Get the eggplant.
The eggplant.
Mr. Goldstone.
Yes.
The eggplant is sublime. Eggplant.
How bad could it be?
That's going to be also one of the quotes. The eggplant is sublime.
The show wasn't only delicious, the eggplant was sublime.
Make sure you mention it in your review.
Mention it in the review, because I loved it. And it's not only me, my sister said it was good.
Tony, Anthony, no more coffee for you.
Well, eggplant is just a funny vegetable.
And we have two performances today, everyone.
Yes.
That's right. There's a matinee.
There is a matinee.
At 1 o'clock.
And an evening.
My goodness. Yep. So you have three shows today because you're putting out a lot of energy
we
here.
We have a rehearsal in between. I mean, some of us do. And there's a put-in rehearsal. Someone's coming into the show. So we have to do it.
So thank God we have a lot of energy this morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you are going to sleep well tonight, all of you.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Hopefully you will.
Hopefully.
Careers. Two of you have been on Broadway. Do you aspire to Broadway still? You're still both very young. But Anthony, as I recall, you were...
Yeah. I'll sell...
Anthony Valbero. Listen to me.
Go ahead.
As I understand it, you were out of the business for a while. Is that right?
No, I've never been out of the business.
He's been out of his mind.
Out of my mind. Thank you, Bob. But I'm Bob. No, I've always been in the business, but it's been one of those lives. I mean, everybody has different kinds of lives. I've been in and around and all different kinds of things, and currently was doing a lot of work and still are with this one-man show that I'm doing called A Lady of Familia. So I do 16 characters in it, and I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff. And that's performed in different venues in Manhattan, and I'm, you know, in fact, I curtailed it right now to do this, but, you know, it's like anything else. Just keep on doing from one thing to another. A lot of you got to just keep yourself going.
Well, man. You were interviewed on this station by somebody else a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but a month ago.
And I seem to remember in that conversation that you, I don't mean out of the business because it's obvious you're a theatrical guy.
But obviously.
But you were... inactive, I don't know what to say. You were not inactively in roles. Were you writing at that time?
I was always actively. It's just like anything else. Unfortunately, I didn't have the continuity that some of these actors did because a lot of things got in my way in life, like it does for everybody. But it happens to a lot of actors where there's times in their lives they got to take care of business, they got to do things, come back.
When you're not acting, you're auditioning. Right. When you're not auditioning, you're preparing to audition. When you're not preparing to audition, you're working in an office or you're a waiter or you do whatever you do to get to that final goal, which is
work. Almost everybody in the theater, I mean, people don't necessarily know that, but you know, people who have been nominated for Tony Awards or whatever, it's not like everybody works constantly for 40 years in that career.
Well,
and you know, also
you do.
Luckily, and a lot of us are in this situation, I've been very blessed because if I'm not working as an actor, I'm choreographing or I'm directing something or I'm writing and then producing something. You constant, and then there's times I've worked as a faux artist or I've worked as a waiter, right? You know, we all have. And there's people still in the company right now who are brilliant, who on their off days, the 2 days that are still working 7 days a week. A different thing.
Now, what about, I've often wondered this, what about people, because there are many, many more aspirants than actually roles. What about people who aren't quite as good, who just have that same attitude, I'm going to make it, and they
sometimes do. Don't get the impression everybody in show business is brilliant. There's people that are doing, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. once said, there's some guy in a gas station in Chicago who can make us all look sick. It depends upon your opportunity, your tenacity, getting out there, doing it, and just the throw of the dice sometimes.
Cool.
You know, what is the story that I heard about someone who, as far as Lion King, there was three girls that came in. They were all equally wonderful. And the girl who fit the costume got the role.
Cool.
Oh, that happens all the time, yeah.
We have to come to an end. This has been a great discussion. I want to thank Bob Amaral, Anthony Valbero, Craig Falls, and Amy Griffin for coming to our studio today, especially on such a busy day. One can always accentuate the negative, but as the song goes, you got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr. In-Between. And that is what theater is about. Find the hope in even untenable human drama. Give the audience a sense of, if these characters can make it, so can I, or how fun to be like them. At its best, theater awakens passion within us and teaches us about our own lives and helps light our path to the future. I consider The Producers to be Mel Brooks' masterpiece and can't wait to see this production a week from Sunday. I will surely review it right here next time we meet. Our thought for the week: all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man and woman in his time plays many parts. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, our friend Howard Sturman. I think, I don't see him, maybe he won't be here today, we never know, with the Hometown Hour. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here, and it is now. Health and happiness to you all.